Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Oh my God, she's a comatose ghost and I'm a landscape artist. Oh, we're perfect. Or are we? That's what we're going to unravel this week. Hello, I'm Richard. With me for the podcast is Anthony
Day to you.
and Abby.
Hello.
And this week's film is called Just Like Heaven. I said it right, didn't I?
Which is exactly the experience we had with this film. Dot dot dot.
Yes, it's just like Heaven in that it doesn't make any sense conceptually from the ground up. No. Yes, I picked a rom-com again, guys, because reasons.
Because it's you. Actually,
I'll get into a bit
it
why.
is a bit of a weird one. You're the only one who seems to pick rom-coms. Although you do pick interesting ones at least.
Yeah, I mean, they're underrepresented on the podcast because who the fuck likes rom-coms, really? I mean, just tedious women. Well, no, my generalizing aside, Anthony, what are the details of Just Like Heaven?
Well, Rich, Just Like Heaven is a supernatural romantic comedy from 2005, and it is about a man who is haunted figuratively by his past and physically by the spirit of a doctor in his new home. Together, they must help each other and may end up falling in love along the way. It was directed by Mark Waters, who is also known for Freaky Friday and Mean Girls. Written by Peter Tolan and Leslie Dixon, based on the novel by Mark Levy. And the film stars Reese Witherspoon, Mark Ruffalo, John Heder, Donald Logue, and Dina Waters, who is the wife of the director. Dot dot dot.
What are you trying
I'm not trying to say anything. Maybe the dot dot dots are trying to say something, but I'm not saying anything.
I guess I picked this because, rom-coms, they're a strange beast, aren't they? They're formulaic. And if they're not formulaic, they don't end up being rom-coms, they end up being actual dramatic romance. But, like, rom-coms, they have to obey a formula. Rom-coms need some kind of unique hook, usually, to get you like a concept to sort of rest the formulaic boy meets girl, boy meets problems, girl meets problems, and they eventually all figure it out, have a row, and get over it, and find out they love each other. And I don't know. The podcast was it was entire. It was just we needed a rom-com, and I'd seen a few different trailers for rom-coms, and this one stood out because ghosts, girlfriend.
Ghosts, yes.
Like, the concept is, I mean, it's not a full ghost because the woman's not dead. It's a coma ghost, if that's a thing. I don't know if that, like, I mean, if you don't believe in ghosts, do you believe in coma ghosts? Does.
I'm not sure how to feel about that. I don't know whether it's a good or a bad plot point that she's in a coma, because
Wait.
obviously it makes things easier,
I
but
mean, the version where she's just a ghost and he
It's a
hooks
bit
up
of a
with a.
cop out.
If he has to hook up with a corpse, that doesn't work as a feel-good rom-com.
But these are the questions floating in my brain when I was watching this film.
It worked for Corpse Bride, so. Also, we did Ghost Dad, and I got the same feelings from looking at the visual gags in this. There could be an element of ghost daddiness to it, and Ghost Dad was way, way shitter, I'll say that much. But yeah, so I just wanted to do a rom-com. I hadn't seen it before. Couldn't say I watched it and went, oh my God, guys, I gotta share. It was just weird, plus it ticks the box of being a rom-com, so that's why. Either of you seen Just Like Heaven before?
I've never seen it. I was aware of it because I remember like seeing a trailer for it when it first came out and going like, come on now. But no, I really didn't know anything about it. I watched the trailer again, and it's the trailer is, like you say, very conventional and just the same as any kind of rom-com trailer, which doesn't make it seem special in any way. So I really wasn't expecting anything special. I was hoping maybe there'd be a few odd moments because of the concept, but I was not really expecting anything more than that.
I think when Mark Ruffalo, I think it was in the trailer, you see he's trying to steal a comatose body, and you're just like, wow. I mean, don't spoil that. That's a good reveal. Like, the film, I don't know, we're going to spoil it because that's what the name of the podcast is all about. But it is a bit, oh, well, you can't give too much away because part of it is about him finding out that she's not a ghost but in a coma. And, you know, a podcast reviewing it that claims to be a spoiler-filled one is going to do that. But I don't think a trailer should really give that away. But it's the most ludicrous moment where a man is trying to wrestle, essentially, a condemned woman who's going to die away from the authorities. I mean, that's a weird situation to be in. But, whatever.
Yeah.
It is a conventional rom-com as well, so the trailer suits it in that regard. It's just got a wacky idea. Like, it's a bit too conventional for the concept, really.
Yes, very much so. They don't, like, you know, they do play with it, and some of the things they come up with are silly, but they don't really go for it, do they?
I want them to sit down endlessly trying to figure out if she has contact to the afterlife. And is there anything else she could tell us? And maybe start robbing banks, because she can pass through walls and find out secret. Like, she could find out, like, sure, there must be some way that a woman who has the power of being able to
Yeah, but there is a clock on it. She finds out she's going to die. You know?
That's true.
She hasn't got time to piss around with stuff.
Yeah, the script makes it clear that we're going to stay on point with solving the mystery. So, yeah. Abby, what, you know, you hadn't seen this. What did you suspect was ahead in Just Like Heaven?
Well, I'd only heard your description based on the trailers that you'd seen. And in that sense, it sounded fucking insane.
It sounds dangerously like some kind of Christian movie as well, doesn't it? Did that worry
There were
you?
A couple of moments in it, actually, where I was like, don't you fucking turn on me. Don't you turn. Turn on me.
Yeah. I think I would have liked it to be more about the religious ramifications of... Nah, but all it does is confirm you that ghosts are real, sort of.
Because she's an astral projection, it's different.
But astral projection, that's what I was trying to think of. Thank you, Abby.
Acts of her purpose.
Astral projection.
But, those are real. But it confirms that psychics possibly aren't charlatans, and that people can sense coma ghosts, at least. Like, children with cookies and guys in bookshops can sense comatose women's spirits.
What I like is that it doesn't say that... How can I put this now? Because it does show that there are both... what's the word for when you're a fake psychic? What's that?
Charlatan.
Psychics. Psychic. If you're you're a fake psychic, you are a psychic.
No, because it's got the Ghostbusters that are full of shit, but it's also got the shop guy who does have the gift. So they're not saying, like, oh, every psychic is real. They're saying that guy's real, but there are still people out there who are full of shit.
Yeah, it says there are charlatans in a world of charlatans. But yeah, let's dig into the whole thing then, and we'll bring up any points about the concept as and when. It essentially starts with Reese Witherspoon playing a workaholic doctor who's very good at her job and has just got a promotion but is working too much. And then we have some 90s covers of popular songs by girl bands.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of... Because it's a slightly, you know, alternative chick, vibe it up a bit or something.
Did your classic kind of workaholic doctor... What, doing like a 26-hour shift or something, which is ridiculous. And, you know, she's perfect, she's lovely to everyone, and she doesn't go home and she knows what she's doing and she can't not type up her boyfriends.
Yeah, and all the...
a little bit at this point, anyway, I think.
All her colleagues are whinging about their actual lives and relationships. And later on, it calls back to it like, oh, but even though we whinge all the time, we're not lonely and we're all happy, really, with our families, even though the only context you've had for us is we're complaining doctors.
Mm.
But it felt like an episode of Scrubs was teeing off, to be honest.
It did.
and it's really
weird because it essentially this first kind of 5 minutes doesn't relate to any of the rest of the film, really.
Yeah, and pretty much, I wouldn't be surprised if Reese Witherspoon has cameoed in Scrubs or something. I mean, I've watched a lot of it, but so many people turn up in doctor's clothes and like, oh, it's that episode. Oh, it's the one where Thingy's a patient from that thing. Oh, yeah, him. So Scrubs is full of cameos. She may well have turned up and had an episode, and I just don't remember. Oh, so maybe that is a factor. But she gets hit by a truck, so fuck that bitch. That's what you get for changing the radio and not looking where you're going. And she was doing a bit of talking on the phone as well. So for a minute, I thought it was going to be like a message movie about distracted drivers.
She did actually come out very well from a full head-on collision with a semi-articulated lorry.
Not a hair out of place.
She did.
The lorry that honked its horn and then went, the screen went black as the lights went in her eyes.
It went white.
Well, sorry, faded to white. That presumably gave her lots of internal injuries or... like caused her to have a very special kind of brain injury that put her to sleep without scratching her. It would have been great if he discovered she was in a coma and she was disfigured. And it was like, shit. I'm not as interested now. I might go and nail my downstairs neighbour. Actually,
that would have been a little better little twist at the end.
There were a few moments in this where we were like, if this film stopped now, it would be so fucking maverick and awesome. Like, she didn't remember him, and that was the end.
Yeah. just Mark Ruffalo going and crying on the park bench and being, just hauled off to the insane asylum. Because there's a lot of that, is he crazy shit. But because we know she's real from the start, we know he's not crazy, so there's never any jeopardy with that, really.
Yeah, but how good would it have been if it did actually turn out that he is seeing someone who doesn't exist and he's done all this crazy shit?
Yeah, there's endless like possibilities that it plays around with, oh, what if? And it's like, yeah, what if that? That would be fucked up if Mark Ruffalo's mental. Like, he genuinely crazy.
What if they were both ghosts?
What if he's in a coma? Kind of, you want it to up the ante a bit, because it's... Because you establish her as a person that exists and not a ghost, which is the first part they deal with. We know the end of this. She comes out of a fucking coma, presumably a teardrop or a kiss awakens her, and boom, like they are together. And they fuck with us at the end, like you said. There's a bit where she doesn't recognise him, and that's adds a few minutes of jeopardy. But anyone with sense knows how this ends, so it's more about how they can fuck around with the concept. Really, that it needs to shine during. But yeah, she's beautifully preserved in a hospital bed for, was it 3 months?
Yes.
In the meantime, her apartment, which is fully furnished, this amazing corner apartment in San Francisco, like huge...
But not just hers. Like every apartment Mark Ruffalo is shown when he's looking around is opulent and beautiful and spacious and
just
ridiculous.
Fucking amazing.
Everywhere. It's like, come on now, this isn't real life.
But Anthony, I'm not gonna, I can't live here. The cushions are on the floor. What am I, Japanese? Oh, there's a big pretentious painting in this room. Fuck off. And it's like, can't you just move the stuff out, move your own in? Like, what's the problem here, mate? How fucking loaded is this guy as well? He's so fucking choosy. He's got these massive... Like you say, every apartment's brilliant. And he's like, I just want a shitty red couch to be an alcoholic on, please.
Yeah. Which, you know, you don't understand at the time. So I suppose that makes it a little bit worse. Well, like, when we come to realise why all he cares about is a comfy seat, then I suppose it's not so bad.
Well, Abby, me and you were kind of weirded out when we were watching it, because we were like, what does he do? We were kind of trying to figure out what this seemingly alcoholic, jobless man does to maintain a salary, to be able to stay in her opulent, multi-windowed corner apartment with a crazy view, roof access, corridors that have other rooms we don't even see.
That's the thing. Based on that corridor, there are at least 8 rooms in that apartment.
I mean, she's a doctor, so the salary's not... Yeah, she's like a doctor, so maybe the salary could afford a decent place, but I thought doctors, when they start, they kind of flat share as well. Like, they don't... Like, I don't know...
Yeah, exactly. She'd literally only just become attendant, was it? Attendant doctor?
Yeah.
Although she was going to get a big office, but she didn't get that because... That's awkward. Didn't she establish she still gets the job back when she's awake? Or
they didn't really talk. They didn't really touch on it.
The guy who got her job instead did get punched in the face, but that wasn't... He's out of a job. He has to go live in Phoenix now, meet someone else's comatose ghost or something. Yeah, we were trying to figure out the guy's job, though, Abby. Do you remember us umming and ahhing as to what he could do, or was that a problem?
We didn't work it out, but there was a moment where she was like, what are you doing? He says, let me show you. And the first thing I said was, I'm going to show you the awesome invention that got me all of the money that lets me afford to live here.
Yeah.
But no, he's a landscape gardener. And so, he showed her one garden.
And also, like, they drive up to a big mansion now. She's like, oh, he's like a massive rich guy has rich parents. No, he's a gardener, but a fancy gardener. So I guess he doesn't ride to work in the back of a truck with other Mexicans. What? he's a landscape artist. Are they really rich then?
Yeah, that's all it is, Rich. Just dressing it up a little bit to make yourself sound fancy.
The thing is, the reason he's really rich is he invented the hedge maze. He has a patent on it. If any aristocrat puts one in their garden, he gets a bit of change. Somehow. That's all I could think.
Also, what was the thing with her having a dream about being in the garden?
Because it's like, it's a sister film to The Secret Garden.
Like, I suppose they were trying to imply that they were fated to get together and then something stopped it and life tried to make it happen again somehow.
That's someone else's garden?
Yeah. I had a dream I was waiting there. Like, it's the waiting room of heaven or something. And loads of dry ice in her version. The real garden didn't have dry ice. So, like, if in the universe wants two people to fuck and have children and live together, it intervenes if they don't get together. If accidentally the DJ puts on a song that Reese Witherspoon doesn't like, causes a car crash, then the universe goes, fuck, oh, God has fucked up, we've got to correct this. Let's intervene with coma ghosts and stuff. Let's somehow get them... Like, because all that would have happened at the dinner party is they'd have met each other, maybe got hit it off, and then she'd have continued to be a workaholic. He'd be a bit like, oh, she's always out. They wouldn't have had a great relationship. She wouldn't have learnt anything. He wouldn't have gotten over his ex, like his last girlfriend dying necessarily. So he'd have been miserable, drunk. She would have been never there. They'd have had a terrible relationship if they met at the dinner party.
That's a fair point. She kind of needed to be comatosed in order for them to get together, I suppose.
They needed to get over the life lessons, and that would have had to have happened differently if they'd have met regularly. But hey, let's not beat around the fantastically well-paid bush, or expensive bush, or whatever. Let's get to it. Mark Ruffalo moves into her apartment because it's just right. It's not too hot, not too cold, not too lumpy or whatever. And he proceeds to just hang about in his house. Establishes his friend, Bullock from Gotham.
I'm so glad I've seen him in something else.
I think he's in Sons of Anarchy as well.
I've not seen that.
Abby, you're an aficionado in this guy now that you like him in. Yes.
Not an aficionado. I appreciate his work. Do you know the things I've seen him in, he's good in.
Do you know his name?
His name is Donal Logue.
Donal?
Logue.
I like him. He's good.
He is. Okay.
It's good, because I've only seen him as a grizzled cop, older cop guy, so it's kind of nice seeing him in kind of a different role. Although he's still a kind of morally ambiguous sleaze, so maybe he's getting a bit of typecasting.
It was weird that they, Elizabeth says you need someone who has no morals, and they got him, when all we'd seen of him was David asked him to meet him so they could talk about a problem he was having, and he was being nice.
He was providing free psychiatric help, which, because that was convenient if he was a psychiatrist or something. And he's a bit into drinking and socialising. He doesn't care the guy might be an alcoholic. He wants him to drink. And as British people, we're like, well, yeah, that's normal. So, you know, he wasn't set up as a morally dubious person, but he is pretty game for stealing a comatose woman with very little coaxing. And the one line later he has is like, oh, well, one day I might need you to help me move a body and stuff. But it's like...
I like that, actually.
What, this, let's find out this guy's story. He has reason to think he might need to move some kind of body in future. And it was funny, but it was like dark.
To be fair, I don't think anyone actually expects to be moving a body in their future, but it's still a possibility.
You want to make sure you got friends who'll help you, and he's got one in the bank now. But yeah, so I liked the thing that made me think it's okay for him to move the later on when he's moving the comatose body of Reese Witherspoon with his friend. After presuming he's insane and seeing ghosts, he's still like, I guess I'll help you. But there's a lovely contrivance in the plot that makes him be like the ex-boyfriend of the Reese Witherspoon's sister. And there's a callback to some the pertinent information that Mark Ruffalo is meant to use to convince people that he's actually talking to the real woman. And I like that it played in to convince him to help, because it's a really, like, you're not going to help your friend steal a body from a hospital, are you? Like, so to have him sort of prove it, he also has the, like, she's witnessing him high gestures behind his back and tells him to, you know, there's lots of convincing this guy, but still, I liked the writing was there to make it fun and more believable.
That's true, and it's kind of a bit of a, what's the word? But when, you know, we're dealing with romantic comedies, it's kind of, you know, kind of what you're expecting, and you know it's going to be filled with people making bad decisions and not doing the thing that they should obviously do because, you know, we've got another 30 minutes to fill.
Yeah, I think the key to me needs to be there, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but at least this film, like, there's more of a sense of they are actually trying to do it how you would do it in real life. Like, when they're driving to her sister's, like, they're coming up with a plan of how to go about it and stuff, and it's like, yes, this is what you have to do. Like, this is exactly what you have to do, although you still know it's not going to work because it's a romantic comedy.
But they're stretching credibility in what decisions characters make at what times, but the writing's there to justify it and to move it on quickly enough so that we're not lingering on the implausibilities or the justifications of things. Like, I felt, because it's a rom-com, the writing was solid enough for me to not be nitpicking endlessly, though there are plenty of moments where you go, I don't know if this is the route we would take with solving the problem.
Yeah, it's a kind of contract you kind of enter into at the beginning of the film, isn't it? It's like, okay, it's a romantic comedy involving a ghost. I shall hang my disbelief on this hook for a while and proceed.
Yeah. But yes, the way she manifests eventually is Mark Ruffalo's moved in. I guess he eats takeout for a bit and a few days of settling in. And then she turns up in the clothes she was wearing on the night of the accident and starts nagging him to get the fuck out and stuff, because she's like, oh, what's going on? You're in my apartment. And he's like, oh my God, who's this woman? We both live here. You know. Abby, what did you think of this stuff?
They actually did it fairly well. It could have been a lot more hackneyed than it was. It wasn't perfect, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah, because a lot of it's centred on, like, not giving everything away straight away. She can't come in, be haunting and scary. She has to be seemingly in the apartment. He can come to terms with it. They can argue, and then we slowly realise, oh, she can pass through things and has amnesia, conveniently.
Mm.
I thought it was odd, right? Because Elizabeth, who is played by Reese Witherspoon, and it's David is Mark Ruffalo's character, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, it's not like we're going to call them that endlessly. Just call them by their actor names. But essentially, there's a hint at first that everything Reese Witherspoon's character Liz says is stuff that Mark Ruffalo could have deduced. Like, when she says what her name is, it's because she's read it on the mug he's drinking from, because he's inherited all her tat. And so she doesn't remember anything he couldn't know already, and conveniently she doesn't remember a lot about her life. And that's part of the mystery, is finding out, okay, if I am a ghost, whose ghost am I? Where am I? What happened? And so I thought, well, this will be interesting to be a psychological experiment to see, can we keep the facade of this is a figment? Could it always be a figment of his own mind and a creation of his loneliness? Because he's lost a girlfriend. If he's projecting a ghost girlfriend now, that could be a really interesting avenue to go down. But eventually we establish, no, she can remember things. And it'll be things that Mark Ruffalo can't have deduced. And she can interact, it seems, without him.
So that help him stab a man back to life in a restaurant.
That's fucked, wasn't it? See, this is where credibility jumps out the window, that scene.
Yes. Weirdly, in a supernatural thing about ghosts, it's like the weird thing is the attitude of people around a dying man.
What I thought was particularly odd. So two things. So like just a kind of anecdotal joke for the film with the concept in play. Once she establishes she's a spirit that's connected to him in some way, and that they trying to unravel the mystery, they talk boringly about a restaurant that she always wanted to go to, never found time to, gives a shit. And then a guy has like a very specific medical issue, and so she as a ghost is talking him as a ghost doctor. Which is a better title for the film, I think. Ghost Doctor. I'd watch a TV series called Ghost Doctor. It'd be great. She talks him through the weird, like, tracheotomy. No, it wasn't a tracheotomy, that's like your throat. But, like, it's a paring knife-based piece of surgery she has to do into his lung. And he's talking him through. And meanwhile, all the people in the restaurant are listening to a man argue with himself about putting a man up, and just go, actually, I think we'll just wait for the ambulance to come, mate. You seem to be talking to someone to your left that isn't there. And he goes along with it. That's the other thing. He actually does do it and save the guy's life. And you go, nah, I don't think ghost could have convinced him to do surgery on a man.
I think that's why a lot of people don't really react per se. It's because he keeps achieving things that are good. It's like, oh, you saved that guy's life. I guess it's okay that you're crazy.
If he hadn't started breathing, you'd have been in deep shit. But he has, so you're a hero. Well, checkmate. Yeah, I mean, the film does just about get away with these scenes not having... Because there's a few times he gets almost carted away, doesn't he? But it just does enough to make him seem like maybe he's not crazy. Which he clearly is. But yeah, like, she dicks around with him for a while at the start, isn't it? It's just literally, she can't accept that she's a ghost until she accidentally stands through a table.
But even then, she doesn't accept it.
She tries to pick up a phone at one point, and she's like, oh, I can't, her hand goes through it, and she's like, oh, I'll go try the other one. It's like, no, bitch, you've just realised for the first time you're some kind of astral projection hologram. You have no ability to pick up a phone. You're having a mental breakdown now. If you think you're a person and your hand goes through a phone, you don't think I'll get the other phone. You think, oh my God, what's happening to me? I am a ghost. What? Ah! You freak out to do, not, oh, I'll be huffy somewhere else.
Yes. But, you know, I could understand if she's slow to come round to it. You know, nobody wants to think you're dead.
I find it hard to accept, especially because I don't believe in ghosts. I'd be like, I'm dreaming. Yeah.
You'd be something that you hate.
Something I don't hate ghosts. That I don't have any time for people pretending they're real.
That's a fair point, though. But like, if you did just wake up and you were a ghost, it's like you wouldn't accept it because you don't believe in ghosts.
Yeah, and
I suppose it's the same thing with her. Like,
and because she's presumably this is in her coma dream that she doesn't remember or something. Like, if she's in a dream mentally. But in reality, she's projected into her old house. Or like, she seems to appear occasionally, like ghosts do, instead of living their life constantly. Not that we're going to get into criticizing the idea of ghosts or anything, but like, she doesn't do anything in between nagging him. She turns up and says, "Get out of my house!" Occasionally, so she doesn't. Mm. That's like a dream, I guess. Like, she doesn't have a continuous thought. Like, I don't. Like, she just. Nags when just give him enough time to forget about it and be like, oh, that was weird when I saw a woman in my bathroom and it felt real, but it wasn't. So then she fucks off long enough for him to carry on with his life and maybe start telling people he's seen a woman that isn't there.
She does have a line somewhere in the film, like when I'm not around you, I feel like I'm not there or something. Which is an interesting concept, but they don't really follow through with it because she then stays in the hospital by herself.
Yeah, that it's odd when they because they should go around together all the time because it's makes more sense.
It makes more sense because then they're linked like as people, and then it makes more sense that they end up together at the end.
It's also odd that he can just ditch a ghost that he's proven is real. Like, I don't know, I'd kind of, at that point, I'd be trying to turn my life around so that I can prove there's a ghost. And you could at least become a magician that can prove, like, you could do loads of, there's just, if you've got someone telling you what's happening in a room where you're not in the same position, that's instantly workable as a thing, as a power. You have someone, like a secret agent, in on something with you. And so I'd be turning it around to like, well, I'm not just leaving the nice woman who's... she's discovered she's in a coma, I guess. You can't really be like, now that you're really a ghost and you accept you're in a coma, do you want to come with me and we're going to cheat in Vegas or something? I guess it makes some sense to leave her there. But it would have been, I would have liked it if she'd have never been really apart from him.
I think so.
But she just spent some time like being in sunny positions, like I'm ahead in the fridge. come on now, stop drinking. She's really obsessed with him not drinking.
Yeah, essentially the trailer montage in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in this wacky place now. I'm gonna sing at you a song from Annie while you watch sport because you're a nagging girlfriend. I mean, I just want him to accept the situation. Once he accepts that she's there and a ghost, you know, don't you want to know stuff about the other side? I mean, she can't necessarily tell you anything. Isn't it a bit of a stalling point once they accept the reality? It shouldn't be about, shall we solve the mystery? It should be about, oh my God, paranormal shit is really happening. Well, he does go get books. It's fair enough, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. The point I was going to make was that... this first section did kind of drag a little bit, especially compared with the pace of the rest of the film. But I think you brought up a point there. It's like they couldn't reach that point too early, otherwise the film kind of does stall. So I suppose I can forgive it a little bit because they do throw in enough comedic elements in there to keep you entertained.
Yeah, they sort of have to bond and understand who they are and accept each of their circumstances. She's accepting she's a ghost or something, and he's accepting he sees a ghost that's more believable than they usually are. She's not just some mist in a photograph. Abby, do you want to explain the connection? Mark Ruffalo goes to the bookstore. Do you want to sort of explain some of that? Maybe talk about any element of the film you feel like relates to it?
Well, the original tacky ticks is that his apartment is possessed and needs to be exorcised.
That's our exorcist connection.
But I do like the way that it was exorcised as well. Because he tried everything, and that priest gave it his all, fair play.
Yeah, the
he
priest
tried hard,
funny.
That priest.
He was aggressively chucking holy water about and shouting shit. What was the middle-aged Chinese ladies with candles? What was that?
I don't know. It was weird. They just seemed to throw fire around. I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah, they had Ghostbusters, as I think you mentioned, Abby, as well.
That was a little bit too on the nose, I think.
Well, they played the music. It wasn't necessary to play the music or whatever.
But it was thing from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, I did my little, oh, it's the guy from Brooklyn. And it was lost on Abby because she hasn't watched it. I was like, oh.
For anyone else, Joel McKinnon Miller is his name.
And which character does he play? He's like two of the dopey guys. One of the two dopey guys.
He plays...
Scully?
Oh, I can't remember.
Is this...
Scully.
Scully.
Scully, yeah.
Or Hitchcock. Is it Hitchcock is the other one? Not Mulder. Anyway, no, he's in it. He's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine and he's a hoot. And in this, he was just a, you know, pyramid-holding Ghostbuster or something.
He flushed the ghost down the toilet.
Oh, that was funny. He flushed the ghost down the toilet. Ah. I didn't care for all of it. When Reese and Mark were standing there going, these guys, they're idiots. It's like, fuck off, film. You're asking me to stretch my belief. And you're like, oh, these charlatans. Why doesn't anyone see her for realsies? But luckily, the bookstore guy, he's got a gift. And like Napoleon Dynamite's there, isn't he?
That's right. Apparently, like, this was the first film that came out after Napoleon Dynamite, and there were rumours going around that John Heder had died.
What?
So
he could be in the movie
weird.
As a ghost.
That's true. But no, like, this film apparently was his kind of like, hey guys, no, I'm alive, look, I'm in this film.
Very weird.
That's so insane.
Stoner guy who believes in ghosts but not UFOs. It will help you out with your books, guy.
Yeah, also, he was a bit of a weird character because, like, at the beginning, I don't really like him. He just seemed to be doing his Napoleon Dynamite shtick again and stuff like that. But by the end, you do kind of like him, don't you?
Abby?
It's sort of like... He's really consistent and he's really positive as well. He was really encouraging to them to reconcile the situation, but in a chill way. It's nice.
It's kind of funny that he's not that, like, anyone who can believe that your story about you're a ghost, and he's the first person to sense her genuinely, but he only gets like a vague sense of her mood when she's ranting or raving or feeling things. And so he's accurately able to sort of get vague moods and stuff because he believes in it or special or whatever. And I'm okay with him, like, because if you can see her as well, it kind of spoils the point of Mark Ruffalo's character. But I think the more compelling thing is the very, very end when the rom-com wraps up.
Oh my God, yeah!
Yeah.
Go on. No, you go on.
The reveal after, they, you know, no big spoiler to say that the romantic couple get together and live happily ever, who gives a shit. But after that, it, like, they're at the rooftop of the apartment, and then it pans out, and it reveals that in, like, a glitter snowball of San Francisco, with the building she lives on, is in the hands of this librarian psychic guy. And it's like, wait, was he laughing, or... What was the thing?
He says, like, righteous or something like that, you know, like, right on.
Yeah, so... Is he God? They live in a snow globe? What's happening?
It was a really odd thing to have at the end, you're right. It really did throw me right at the end, just like, what?
He's fate, and the ball is his crystal ball controlling... the lives, but it's also a glitter ball, so it's like this really slapped on fucky metaphor or fuck with you concept that just adds and breaks the fourth wall and changes it into fucking Inception or something.
I think they did kind of lay a groundwork down for it, for him being some kind of like fate projection. But because he is quite enigmatic, he does seem to know things that he shouldn't.
But for
it to do this right at the end, it's like, what?
And also, I thought for a minute you were going to justify it. They laid the groundwork, you know, like that time it's raining, it rains glitter. And it's like, what? Like, but no, you mean this guy is maybe more important to the film. But then it's such an afterthought. It clearly wasn't that. The main focus is about a romantic pairing. Like, it's nothing about massive conspiracies of manipulating people, really. It just sort of tries to be a bit clever, I think. Abby, what did you make of the fucking weird ending reveal?
Well, I got the impression that he was watching, but that does take him past the kind of psychic that he was being portrayed as into a much higher realm.
Well, he's like, it's like, oh, manipulating it's not this... the universe.
No, I thought he could only use it to watch, not manipulate. He could literally just see things. But even then, that's really different to just getting a general sense of a presence.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it added so many weird what ifs that I think they would just, like, would just. I mean, the reason is they wanted to have a funny gag moment at the end.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can read into it in loads of fucked up ways once you think about it from the perspective of him having some weird psychic watching device or whatever they're trying to suggest. Or they're a happy couple who live in a snow globe and this guy's mentally ill. That could be the explanation. He dreamt it all because he's crazy.
It's all in his mind.
Yeah. That's why it doesn't make sense. but I don't know. Like, they fumble through a bunch of scenes trying to discover what's the deal, and eventually they figure out, oh, I'm not dead and I'm not falling in love with a dead woman. Like, my girlfriend who has died. See, that gets revealed that Mark Ruffalo is a bit sad because his girlfriend just fucking died. It's brutal. It's just like, fuck.
Especially that, like, speech he gives. Like, it's like, fuck, I actually do feel sad now.
Yes, it's awful.
He just delivers it really well. And it's like, wow, that was acting deserving of a better film.
And just over the course of the thing, it's like, oh shit, I'm in the... What's the big clue is that she remembers, oh, doctor, I'm a doctor, because they save a guy's life in the restaurant with this comedy scene we mentioned. And then they go, oh, fuck it, we'll just pop over to the local... What's the local hospital? Oh, shit, it's all... Like, once it starts flooding back to her, it really sort of changes the site. It's not... No longer can it be the, is Mark Ruffalo insane? It's 100% confirmed she's alive, in a coma, and now it's just, for some reason, I have a connection to a woman who's unconscious, and I have all the information she can impart to me. And chat to her, I've mentally tapped into an unconscious woman's brainwaves or something.
And they do try to make a big thing of that as well. It's like, why is it only I can see you? But it doesn't feel like it belongs there. It's like, why couldn't it just have been, well, he's the guy who lives in her apartment?
Yeah. And, like, what is it? That all that connects them is they were going to meet. They don't have a childhood past that they've forgotten. They don't have some contrived fucking reason that they're fated together. It's just they're right for each other, I guess. You know, it's a bit weird that he falls in love. I find it odd when he's like, when they discover, he's asking around, trying to figure out who she is. And there's the really, like, desperate neighbour hot chick who's like, come and fuck me. And he's like, no. I can't have sex while this ghost lady's watching me. Abby, that was your explanation, wasn't it? I was like, what's wrong with this guy? Is he gay? Like, why isn't he fucking this attractive woman who's asking him in?
Yeah, I think it would just, like, it would be inappropriate to him to have sex with someone in front of her.
Just winking at Reese Witherspoon, be like, this could be you. Do you like that?
Plus, you know, it wasn't the classiest of moves either.
Well, when she turns up in his apartment later to be a kind of awkward, like, it's weird because the film sort of presumes they're a couple. And she's like, well, this woman doesn't, she's a stranger to you, and you already know each other because you're having this weird thing. Reese Witherspoon doesn't care if you fuck this woman in her apartment, as long as you don't get spunk on her coasters that you're not using or whatever. Like, she has no stakes. They're not in a relationship, but yet Mark Ruffalo's like, oh, I can't cheat on the woman I'm not. The woman I was.
No, it's not about cheating. It's about, he's literally being watched.
Yeah.
And how is he going to be able to, you know, keep his... How can you keep your mind on a situation like that when there's literally an angry-looking woman in the corner staring at you?
Well, she's not that bothered. Like, she's like, that's fine, I don't mind. She should leave. I mean, she's inappropriate, if anything.
He is still coming off after the death of his wife, though, so...
I guess.
Maybe he doesn't want to just sleep with the first person who asks him.
But then I don't think we know that when it's happening, so it's a bit like, what is with this weird getting ghost-cucked? Like, what's the problem here?
No, I don't know. I think it was just... Because I felt it was, you know, really unclassy as well, and it'd be a bit like, meh.
Yeah, she's a bit... I guess, suppose the idea is the neighbour's a bit too... sup, let's fuck, let's fuck.
Although they do turn it around, which I liked later on, in her second scene where she kind of comes over. Because they do play it the same, like she's, you know, some sort of, you know, cougar, bimbo, man-eating kind of thing. But then she has, like, a speech about, like, you know, I've heard you through the thing, you sound lonely, I'm lonely. Why don't we just, you know, not be lonely for a night? And it's like, but when she had that speech, I was like, oh, I've actually... really come around to her now.
But she drones on about weird shit, like a vacuous person as well, so it's like you get the implication that she's a bit thick and interesting. Let's not root for her now. I want Mark Ruffalo to fuck coma woman. What? Of course we don't. This seemed so super inappropriate. I fell in love with you while you were unconscious and we were separate. We're fated to be together. Such a weird thing to try and get over, isn't it? But they do. They fucking try their heart out. What's that? So there's a lot of convincing the people at the hospital that he's her boyfriend that they didn't know about. And they sort of set him up as a suspicious but believable character who wants to visit her in a coma.
I like that immediately they're like, yeah, no. She didn't have a boyfriend. What the fuck you say?
She was here 26 hours every day, somehow. And just, she got no dick. So, you are kidding, right? But, you know, it means that... I liked the scene where they're both standing there over the actual body of Reese Witherspoon. And they're trying to figure out, so what do we do now? Do we just mush our faces to get, like, what do you... And she does the thing that's, like, really bizarre, but she sort of tries to lie in her body.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
That was great. I like that, because it's like, well, yeah, that's exactly what you would do. Even if it is ridiculous.
It sort of makes the effect seem all the more obvious crap. Camera bullshit, but it is funny seeing her arms going up as she's trying to, like, I'll just raise my arm. Nope, it's coming out. Okay. That was when it was the most ghost dad. And it also, it brought, like, after that point, it really highlighted to me, okay, so early on she couldn't grab a phone, but then as the film goes on, I mean, they don't make a big point of it, but she can sit in cabs and travel, and she can sit on chairs.
And it's the same, lounge on tables. And...
yeah, but she can't pick things up. Like, it was the same logic of Ghost Dad of, I guess she has to control mentally whether she sinks through the floor or not. I could sit in a chair. Abby, I believe you had some justification for her touching things that were convenient for her to touch.
I interpreted it as she can't physically influence any objects, but she can position herself so that she looks like she's interacting with it.
But does that mean she has to mentally concentrate? When she's in the back of the cab, she has to move around in the sitting position as a ghost and, like, travel at the same time?
Yeah.
Weird.
A little bit.
But
yes.
The point
but you're right, like, these questions are always at the back of your head, like,
yeah,
when watching a film like this.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I guess if you could physically be in the world and interact with it, it's like, well, I'm basically alive then, aren't I? Like, doesn't really, let's just get my actual body put up in the attic, I'll live up there on life support, and my astral projection that can interact with everything can be here. Just fucking Mark Ruffalo and stuff. It doesn't work, I guess. But, you know, we establish, oh shit, you can't just smush bodies back together. There's something to this, and the something to it is you have to a true love or something, or get over your work less hard, you harrowing doctor lady. Or, like, what was the thing? They have to... True love puts you back together? Being yanked out of your... Being yanked into the corridor and kissed by Mark Ruffalo. Like,
it's... Yeah.
Abby,
it offers no attempt, really, at an explanation. What was their unfinished business? What was their goal?
The unfinished business was that they hadn't met each other.
And they both had to learn to... take time in life to enjoy it and not just be endlessly saving lives. Let a few people die and have a takeaway. Or go to that restaurant. A few people can be helped by other medical professionals. And Mark Ruffalo, call me, fuck someone else. They learned that lesson, and then that brings you out of a coma. Not... What does bring people out of a coma? Just time?
Pretty much. Just... healing body.
Yeah, the right piece of music or someone talking to you, I don't know. Must be awful for people who've... Oh, let's not get into the people who've sad because they got dead ones and people in a coma. Must be horrible.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though, is this is what this film is about.
Yeah.
And it does address the topic of, like, after death, like, what happens... When you're in a coma, and, you know, when do you let them go, and how do you deal with that and stuff? And,
yeah,
it is part of the film, and it is a little bit uncomfortable sometimes.
There's a bit of light humour that's about the sisters having the conversation with the doctor. Oh, so she's on life support for 3 months. Reese Witherspoon was already diagnosed herself as, oh shit, it's not good for me. I've been in a coma this long. It's not heard of that very often people come out of these sort of longer comas. And so when the doctor's talking to her sister, like, oh, well, when Elizabeth was alive, she said, oh, just fucking pull the plug. Like, it's fine. I don't, like, there's no point. I know myself, there's no point holding on for too long. And so, but as the sister, oh, you have the right to decide. And so, the sister's dealing with this. And then Reese Witherspoon's like, part of the joke is, oh no, shit, don't pull the plug on me. I'm a ghost right here. Ah! And it's kind of weird, isn't it?
I think what she said was, like, I thought differently then, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, no shit.
I realise now, people in a coma should be given the utmost chance to live as long as... Fuck, I've turned around. Now that I know the paranormal ghost of coma world is real, all my fucking medical knowledge goes out the window.
But then it is kind of horribly ironic when she gives the speech later on where she's never done anything her sister wanted. And at the end of her life, she's going to do the one thing she did want, but she doesn't want it.
And you're just like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Thinking of what happens after this, so they eventually, you know, live happily ever after, but doesn't she have to dedicate her life to the medical pursuit of people in a comas and the ghosts that occasionally, like, she has to, like, all people in a coma she deals with, she'd be like, shit, somewhere there's a ghost in their old apartment or house. Like she knows this and has a guy who's dealt with her partner's dealt with it. She has been a coma ghost, so she really owes it to medical science to study this. So that's the rest of her life, between eating lasagna with SpongeBob in at her sister's house, which is the weird. I like the kind of chaos of like sister's kids brought everywhere. Like, they were genuinely like cunty little children running around terror. Like, they try and fold up like this harrowing tale of a woman who's trapped in a coma, and the kids are like folding her corpse, her body up in a bed and being told off.
While and the turning doctors... her life support off and stuff, yeah.
While the doctors try to explain to the sister, like, oh, she's probably gonna die. These kids, fucking jerks.
But that scene did have the... It achieved the balance of, like, the black humour and the topic of, you know, turning her life support off because the kids were essentially killing her anyway.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I don't know. Just somewhere, like, sometimes in the back of your mind, you're like, well, I know this is a fantasy comedy, but what is it trying to say about the end of someone's life? I don't know. But it wasn't a problem.
Black comedy doesn't usually go with light-hearted rom-coms. And this is a light-hearted rom-com. And some of the jokes are quite close to tragic. But but it never lets you forget that, oh, we're watching a silly comedy. Like, at no point do you suspend your disbelief long enough to be like, you're never going to have a long cry at this film. No matter, even though it's got, like, people who could die, it's got the mentioned relatives who are dying. At no point are you on the borderline of tears like some rom-coms can bring you to, if you're a complete pussy. I'm not saying I don't cry. No, but you know, like, this film isn't ever going to be taken so seriously you actually tear up, is it? So fuck it, may as well have a laugh.
Yeah, I suppose. But it does try, though. Like I said, it does throw a few scenes in when it tries to get a tear from you.
Oh, he's made a garden on the roof of her apartment. He's been sneaking up to the top of her roof that she doesn't use to build an incredible garden with a spare key that he knows about because he talked to her ghost. Creepy as fuck. Oh, it's touching. But they're going to kiss on the spiral at the centre of the outside rock garden-y. Like, he spends loads of money on, like, wooden structures, stringing shells together, putting bushes on the roof. He has snuck a whole garden upstairs to the roof of this place that she has presumably, bizarrely, private access to because he hasn't gotten over the fact that she hasn't remembered him when she comes out of a coma. Touching. Not fucked up at all. Abby, would that be the right sort of romantic gesture? You wake up from your coma, you don't recall the strange man in a lab coat who's trying to get you to understand who he is, and then you find out he's just an insane man who thought he was in love with your ghost. Are you convinced by him when he builds a garden on the roof?
No. But she does remember him, then.
Conveniently.
So it's a start.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Because once she comes out of a coma, once he's gone to the extent where he's trying to, like, they sign off on the death row. They sign off on pulling the plug on her, and Mark Ruffalo has, like, one more evening with the ghost of Reese Witherspoon to kind of do whatever. And she just, do you want to go to Paris? I'll max out my credit card if we have to. You're going to live for one more night as a ghost or something, and then you're going to die. I just want to lie on my bed. I mean, she's a tired doctor. That holds up. But I just want to, like, touch your hand on the bed. Ghosts don't sleep, do they? I mean, she's up in the morning like, hey, you slept, I pootled around San Francisco or Seattle or whatever, even. Like, what was the deal with my last wish on Earth is to not do anything but touch hands?
I get it. Like, you know, she's never been in love, and like I suppose there's an implication that she's never had sex.
That would be weird.
At least nothing that she was glad to have.
Well, she's had three marriage proposals, at the comedy bit at the start from a man who got dementia or something.
So I didn't so much get she was a virgin as she's never had any that was worth having.
Yeah. So they never outright say it, but they, I don't know, the way they speak about her, like, very much means that she's, you know, a prude and not done anything. Like, that's the heavy-handed, like, all of her friends talking about her relationships and stuff.
I guess she should have just gone, hey, David, have you ever seen the film Ghost? I want to make pottery and have ghost sex with you, please. That's what should have happened. And it would have been great if he was fucking Reese Witherspoon, and because of their psychic connection, she could almost... I almost feel you, is what he says. It's like, yeah, so you don't. You don't. Almost is not. But if he's like people, I get the apartment's high up, I don't know. You don't contrive some way so someone sees in the window and he's like fucking thin air or wanking off or something. And it's just this invisible man sex going on. I don't know. There's nothing they could have done that would have made sense or been on budget, because I went to Paris with, at least she didn't need a passport. She had to sit in the plane pretending to astrally project with him simultaneously because she can't touch anything. She's just sitting there. Fuck this journey. How long do I have to ghost project myself sitting down on this fucking plane? Yeah. Was there any more between convincing his best friend that the ghost's real and yanking her from the hospital bed? Is there anything I've sort of missed out?
No, not really. I mean, they're pretty much next to each other, those two scenes, so...
They're probably bits we've, you know, not treaded over. But the final bit, then, I guess, is the fucking twist of, shit, she, like, the film could end with him getting her... She wakes up from a coma, he gets arrested by the security for yanking a woman under false pretenses. I like that she instructed him how to correctly move a woman who on life support. Like, she did just pick her up. She actually has the medical knowledge to, like, say, oh, you need these things to keep me breathing and things. But the security and everyone stopped because she wakes up out of a coma. And I was like, oh, fuck, we're going to just pull the plug. I was fucking, oh, my God. But then, oh, no, she doesn't remember him. And he gets taken to jail or not. He walks off.
Oh, no, not. Yeah, just leaves. Just walks calmly past the four giant security guards who just, like, had him on the floor.
Yeah, and then even this...
Just because she woke up doesn't mean, like, he hasn't not committed, like, a felony.
Yeah, and he's... that's the thing he does for a while, is he acts crazy at the sister's house. He tries to get more information. And he goes to the sister and starts saying, oh, I was... You know, I knew her. She, like, was in my apartment block, boyfriend, etc. And then, to convince, like, in a desperate attempt not to get her to pull the plug, he says, oh, look, her ghost is here. And she correctly sends the kids away and tries to attack him with a knife because he's being a crazy person.
I loved Mark Ruffalo's scared of a knife acting.
That was the crappiest bit of acting.
I know, but it's like, I don't know, but... I feel like that's exactly how I would react if I turned around and someone was trying to stab me.
When he ran out, it was the worst.
It's physical acting, then, if maybe not his...
Sure, the noises he made as he screamed.
Yeah.
But, like, I did... Like, it was... Obviously, she wasn't going to buy... It's really inappropriate. You start talking sensitively about your in a coma sister, and then you suddenly say, her ghost is here. It was funny and appropriate what happened, and you sort of...
Yes.
Sees him off. But she, at the moment where her sister wakes up, and is like, do you remember Dave here? And there's like, what? No. Sorry. Like, I've only just come out. There was a truck. I'm awake. What's going on? And then it's that weird look on her face like, are you lying? You lied to the doctors, you know, but how much of a liar are you? Were you her boyfriend? That was the weird... Like, although presumably Mark Ruffalo's friend could have just gone, yeah, no, this was the guy coming to the dinner party I was gonna, I set up for. He could explain it, couldn't he? Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, either way, it means that David has to poody a bit and be all slowly building a garden while accepting that the woman he's fallen in love with doesn't remember him because they just hung out as ghost buddies. And, yeah, like Abby said, it should have just ended with that tragedy of inexplicable paranormal bullshit. But no, I mean, you know, was the key to it was just the memory comes back because of certain things and gestures. And I mean, he can prove that he knew shit because he knew where the key was. So there's nice tangible proof, but there's also emotional proof. And then the writers just go, she remembers.
They touch. Like, he gives her back the key and their hands touch. And
didn't they touch when they kissed, though?
Yeah, but she wasn't awake.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Tell Dr. Sleepy Big D and like, Snow White then.
There was a line somewhere where she says, like, I feel like if we do touch, then it'll all be fine. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, they live it's happily fun. Ever after.
But then at this point, we want them together, don't we?
We want them to have physical, real-world sex that we've been missing out on. Cause...
yes, that's what we want.
It's quite a romantic film in that it's not about fucking. It is about pure, honest love. I mean, what do you know about him, though? He's a landscape gardener. He's got a friend, and he's had a hard time with his girlfriend who died suddenly. But we don't really know who he is. We know he's a gardener, yes, or a landscapist. We know who she is. She's a doctor, but we also know, we've seen her with patients, we've seen her, she's getting in the middle of a promotion, we know her sister. Well, there's a lot more to her side of the relationship.
I didn't consider this beforehand, but you're right. We don't really know that much about, was it Jack?
David,
sorry.
Drunky McGee.
And yet it doesn't really matter, because His character throughout is charming and
helpful, isn't he? He's the thing that makes her fall in love with him is not that he tries to watch sport while she's singing, but it's that he has helped her get through this and he's saved her life. He saved a man's life with her help. But like, so he's not so much the perfect man or interesting. He's just, they've bonded through figuring out the puzzle.
Being together, yeah.
So that maybe is enough. But it is a bit strange, because he has no personality, because he accepts all of her furniture. So it's not like he comes in and starts putting up, like, Iron Maiden posters, or, like, changing the decor or anything. He just, I have no life for furniture. Like, what was in his old apartment? They had nothing he could bring? Like, he doesn't have a single picture of his mother or something?
Yeah, on reflection, it makes a lot more sense. Because, you know, your wife's died, you moved out, you don't want anything to remind you of that. And then, he's lazy and doesn't want to do anything except for sit down and drink beer. But yeah, you're right, like, at the time, it's a bit like, who are you?
Yeah, he presumably brought clothes in. Also, the family, when they put her back in the house, when she's like, out of a coma, she's probably lived with the sister for a bit, and the family put her back in her old apartment, which Mark Ruffalo has moved out of. Their family are very confident that the man who lived there for a month hasn't tampered with anything. And it's like, he could have wiped his ass on the drapes. But you're like, you don't know if he moved things about in your kitchen or in your, like,
it's statistically likely that something has moved with someone else living there for a month.
Yeah, what they should have said is, oh yeah, there might be a few changes, but as far as we know, we checked all the furniture is still here. Like, sorry if the guy stole your fucking tin opener or, like, rummaged through your fucking knickers drawer or whatever. Like, they don't know, do they? They can't check everything. They don't know exactly every item and where it was. It's just, statistically, someone's put a fucking mug down without a coaster and taken one picture. What the fuck? This place is insanely different.
The picture! That's what was... Yeah, okay. That's what was our place.
But,
I forgot.
But generally speaking, no, we can guarantee the man who lived here for a month did nothing. Moved nothing. We didn't even collect your belongings. We left them there. So, I mean, we found out that all of this was pointless and in the snow globe of a man who works in a bookshop. Yeah. And all that really matters is, did the film work? Did we enjoy it? And why? if we did,
that's an interesting way of put it. Did the film work? Not was it good?
No.
Did it work?
Yeah.
And I think it did work.
Go on.
I don't necessarily think it was quality, but I think it worked. It was a paper thin premise, but I think there were more layers there than there had right to be. I think Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo were absolutely lovely, okay, and should definitely be a couple. And I think that's the reason it works, is the two main actors. Like, I can't really see it working with other people. Like, but these guys are really young and nice, and Mark Ruffalo has that weird kind of nervous quirkiness to him, which you don't really see that often in Hollywood films as the leading romantic guy.
There's one he's in where he's the sort of romantic lead in 13 going on 30. He's this sort of we can't go into a sub review of that, but he's a kind of slightly nervous, downbeat, not your conventional romantic lead character in that. And it works again. Like, so, I don't know why Mark Ruffalo works in a sort of nice rom-com, but he does.
He's a charming man, that's all. Yeah.
He doesn't smoulder, but, you know, he steams. Or something, I don't know.
So whilst, you know, it's definitely got its flaws, and if you think too hard about it, it's going to fall apart. But I think it works. I think that's the right word you picked up there, Rich. It may not be good, but it works.
It's a professional job with professional people. It's got people who can do a standard rom-com concept plot rom-com. Like, it's directed like a workman. It's fine. The concept, though stupid, is played as all rom-coms should. It's like it's all very it's professionally written, so it makes sense. It's very, there's not a lot of waste shit. It's not like, doesn't go off on stupid tangents. As fun as it would be to be weirder and go with the idea more and fuck with you, it sets its stall out as, we're going to make a weird rom-com about a ghost hooking up with a guy, and it, like, it sort of, it's playful and different, functional and workmanlike and professional. It's just very well done. This is a film. This is a proper, you've done beginning, middle and end. Other than slapping on the weird, it's a guy controlling it in a glitter ball. It functions. It's perfectly fine. And if you like rom-coms, it's at least a fun, different idea to have a go at. So in that regard, it works. Like, it works as a film. I don't know that I don't hate it and I don't love it, but I, you know, respect it as a success. It achieved what it wanted to. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think how that, what these are in terms of our metaphor. Like, is there a workman ghost or some kind of, it's a Ouija board. It functions as a board game and it's full of shit, but it can work and you can have fun with a Ouija board. The principle works. You put your hands on it and it moves because you're caught kind of, you're psychically willing it to, or you just are because you're also collectively wanting it to move. So I guess for me, it's the board game Ouija, the Ouija board. It is ghostly and silly and paranormal, but fun and functioning when you have a ghost in the room, of course. So maybe that's my metaphor, I guess.
All I really want to point out is that this is one of the few reviews we've done where I haven't been particularly critical of the script.
It's actually quite funny.
Yeah, it's not like the best thing ever, but it was serviceable. Laughed a couple of times. The story didn't suck. I'm just like, yeah, you are accomplishing fine. This is fine. This is fine. This is also fine.
It's odd because, like, as a comedy, if you get a few laughs, you've done your job. That's my rule of thumb. I laughed a few times intentionally at the jokes that were there. A few times I thought the jokes were a bit crap or too weird or implausible. But there were a few jokes that made me laugh, and the romance was standard. It wasn't particularly romantic. I didn't think they weren't telling an endless, timeless tale of, oh, you didn't think these two have got chemistry. You just thought, oh, they're likeable, which is the basic thing you need to want the characters to be together, isn't it?
Mm.
So, Abby, go on.
So, I'm trying to follow on from what you were saying about how it's quite workman-like. There's a chair that came into where I work recently.
Was it a ghost chair?
And it's just... No, it's one of those chairs that doesn't look like much. It's just one of those standard-looking ones, and you don't expect much of it. But when you sit down, you're like, actually, this is quite comfortable. I didn't expect this to be as comfortable as it is. It's no lounge chair. But for the chair that it looked like, you didn't expect it.
Could you say it's like the sort of chair you'd come across in the waiting when you're sitting next to a comatose person in a hospital? You think, oh, this is not going to... I couldn't sit on this. But you can comfortably sit on it for a few hours or minutes. And you're like, oh, this is... I can happily sit here and hold the hand of my loved one. And I'm surprised at this being so comfortable, considering it just looks bog standard.
I guess I could. If
Come
you were
on.
Gonna make me,
I am gonna make you. Mine was was ghost themed. Mine relates yours. I crowbarred into being comatose room based,
and mine is going to be like some kind of either comedic Halloween mask or some kind of funny Halloween decoration. Something like you'd say you'd put. Like bats around a lamp or something.
Yeah.
You've fundamentally not changed the core concept of the lamp, but you've made it Halloween-y by sticking bats around it.
You're not going to win any competitions. If it was a fancy dress costume, then it wouldn't win. Mm. But you go, oh yeah, you are. You're not just in a big bag with a mask on. You are convincingly Frankenstein. It's fine. The decoration is fine, but you're not going to win the best Halloween shop window. Like, you know, like it's
standard. Yeah, exactly. It's like you've taken something that functions and you've put a new thing around it and it still functions.
Yeah, you've put a bed sheet on your head and made yourself look like a ghost. You've done a bit more than cut holes in a sheet, but we go, oh yeah, you're a ghost for Halloween. I get it. Well done. You're not going to get any accolades, but you're not going to get criticised.
Hmm.
That's good. Well, it's oddly satisfying. What could have been a very fucking shit and irritating film surprised me by being, like, competent. And I think we had enough fun with it. Like, it could have been really... If it had been really good, it would have been like, oh, fucking...
Yeah,
nothing to play
about,
around
like.
With. But they were quite... It's some really weird shit that it gets you thinking about. And so we sort of recommend it, but we wouldn't, you know, you don't need to rush out and fucking watch it. It won't change your life. But
you
won't bring
you
out of a coma.
I was going to say, Rich, you seem to have a talent for spotting decent rom-coms.
I don't know. I can't. When they're really chintzy and bad and awful, and then when they're really weird, they don't feel like they've been a rom-com, really. I don't know. Yeah. Mediocrity. I got a gift. Anyway, the end of the podcast. Hopefully...
No, wait. What's Salieri's speech about mediocrity?
I am the patron saint of mediocrity.
There we go.
I absolve you. Also, the line in Fury Road where he's like, mediocre. That's a more modern one that kids will understand. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, hopefully you'll be coming out of your spoiler-filled induced coma now, and we'll be able to click on other things on the internet, but we'll hopefully join us next week so we can put you back into a stupor with our chit-chat. No, kidding. Hopefully you enjoyed it. My God.
We're the best. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.